Welcome to the latest Convex Conversation. I'm journalist Helen Fospero. 8 years ago, I met the most incredible woman. I was a presenter on the GMTV sofa at the time when my ex-boyfriend called to ask if I could look after his cousin who was making an appearance on the programme. Her name, Claire Lomas, now Claire Lomas MBE and a lovely friend. In 2007, Claire was paralysed in a riding accident whilst competing in horse trials in Nottinghamshire. She was just 27. She crashed into a tree which left her with broken ribs, punctured lungs, pneumonia, multiple fractures of the neck, and a spinal cord injury causing paralysis from the chest down. The Breakfast TV story that day was that Claire was defying all odds by walking the London Marathon in a special robotic suit, a challenge which would end up taking her 17 days to complete. Claire has accepted her devastating injury and navigated through some dark days to become one of the most inspirational women I know, talking to school children all over the country about the split second which changed her life and how she's turned all of that negativity into positivity and hope. She's a mum to two beautiful little girls, Maisie and Chloe, and has raised more than £750,000 for charity. Claire joins me from her home now in Leicestershire. Claire, I'll never forget that day at ITV. We just really clicked, didn't we, and kept in touch after the marathon.
Yeah, lots of moments that year that have really changed my life. And that was the start of it, Helen, and led on to lots of things since then.
Lots and lots to talk about with you, Claire. I mean, I'd like to start at the beginning, if we may. You're a talented horsewoman. What happened that fateful day back in 2007 with you and your beloved horse, Roland?
So it was the tiniest of errors. I'd ridden the horse 5 years. We knew each other really well. And I was at an event I'd competed at lots of times before. And I set off onto the cross-country course. Everything was going really well. And the horse clipped his shoulder on a tree. We just got tiniest misunderstanding. He thought we were going one way. We're meant to be going the other way. And that little error meant that I hit the tree. And then as I got to the ground, I knew I was paralysed. Totally ruined everything that I'd planned to do in the future, all those goals and ambitions I'd got to go on. And I just reached the highest level in the sport. So it's going to put a stop to a lot of things.
You trained as a chiropractor. And I remember you telling me, Claire, that when you were lying on the ground after the accident, you knew that you were paralysed, didn't you?
Yeah, it was my worst nightmare. Before my accident, I never sat still for a second. And I remember lying on the floor, and I'd had bad falls before and always got up. And this time I couldn't even feel the ground I was lying on and there's no chance of getting up. And I do remember thinking, I've really done it this time and I'm paralysed. And I just couldn't think of anything worse of not being able to move when I was so active and had so many plans ahead of me.
Talk us through, if you can, Claire, I know it was a long journey, but a bit about the journey. You were taken to Sheffield Hospital, weren't you, for the start of your treatment and for them to basically try and put you back together because you were in quite a mess, weren't you? Ribs and broken bones and
absolutely.
All sorts of things other than the spinal cord injury.
So they told me what my injuries were, and the spinal cord damage was because I dislocated my spine at T4 level, which meant I was paralysed from the chest down, so no movement or sensation from the chest down. But actually, it's far more than that because a spinal injury affects nearly everything from your injury level down, so your bowel, bladder, temperature regulation, sensation, blood pressure, nearly everything. So there's a lot to come to terms with, not only over the next few days, but weeks and even months and years. It's a massive life change. They did an amazing job at the Queen's Medical in Nottingham, and I ended up getting pneumonia. I was in intensive care. I needed a ventilator to breathe. I was seriously ill as well. And then I was moved to Sheffield Spinal Unit.
How did you cope on that day when the news was broken? And do you still remember your thoughts when you realised that you wouldn't walk again?
When they told me it was highly unlikely I'd ever walk again, I knew that I was going to give it my all and make any recovery I could. I also knew that my injury was serious. I might not get any neurological gains, so any movement or sensation back, but I always knew that I wanted to give it my all. So I very much tackled it in that way by doing a lot of rehab and, yeah, still do, to be honest, but didn't really get any movement or sensation back over the years. But I have managed to keep myself fit and healthy.
In a minute, we'll move on to the inspirational side of your story, Claire, and all the things you've done in the years since the accident. But were there some downtimes? Were there some very dark and sad times where you felt completely broken by it?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. Everyone thinks like the London Marathon was my biggest challenge, but it was nothing compared to just getting out of bed when I had no reason to get up. That was a lot harder. I felt like I had absolutely everything taken away from me. All those plans I'd set myself and goals that I'd set myself were just stripped away from me, and I had no reason to get up. It's a bit like the opposite of having a nightmare. I'd have dreams that I was able to walk and eventing and doing all the things that I loved, and I'd be out for a night and dancing, and then I'd wake up and see my wheelchair next to my bed, and it was truly devastating. And I actually wrote my book a few years ago, and I started from a scene from the shower, because I don't know about you, but I never really appreciated going and having a shower. I just get in the shower and get out and really take it for granted that I was able to. And now it'd become a huge thing. I'd have to heave myself into the shower chair that physically was hard for me. And I even hated looking at the shower chair. It was a big, ugly, sturdy thing I'd got at the time. I hated it. But mentally, it would break me. I'd look down, and at this point, my legs had wasted because I hadn't got the electrical stimulation bike that I found out about a couple of years after my accident. My stomach was soft and floppy, not toned like it was that morning of the horse trials. And then I'd see the water running down my body. I didn't know if it was hot or cold. I felt two-thirds dead. And there was times where I just wish I'd hit the tree a little bit harder. I thought, how will I ever be happy and be paralysed?
And how did you start to rebuild your life?
I did it by making myself take little opportunities, things that wouldn't seem like anything to most people, like going out for lunch with friends. It's very easy to say no. When you didn't feel like it, you were sat in the house, I felt sad and angry what had happened. But most of the time I'd make myself go and do these little things and usually felt better for it. I didn't realise at the time that they were quite as significant, but it's a bit like a jigsaw. To get the bigger picture, you've got to put all these little bits in, and these were the first few pieces, just making yourself go out and continue life. And yeah, if you just stay there sitting in the same four walls, you're never going to move forward. So it was just kept finding that strength to dig deep and do these things early on.
And you went back to watch eventing, didn't you?
Yeah, I was watching eventing in that first year, particularly tough because my horses had different riders on, and you know, you never think you're going to be sitting there watching a horse that you've trained for 5 years to get to the top level and then have to see someone else reap the benefits of your hard work. But yeah, I did go. It was probably one of the worst days of my life, but I managed to get through it. And you know, it was going to be one of those things where I couldn't really win, because I was sad if I sat at home watching it on telly, and I was sad if I was there. I just had to get through those days.
What about Roland, Claire? Because I mean, you just absolutely adored Roland. I mean, what was that like seeing Roland again after the accident?
Yeah, it was quite emotional. I think he thought, what are you doing, sat down there all the time? But Roland never really did a lot after me. He was fine from the accident, but he retired after that and had a nice, easy life in the field.
And you met your husband, Dan, after your accident. There was a bit of internet dating going on there, wasn't there?
Yeah, so after my accident, I discharged myself from the hospital. Only 8 weeks of being in the spinal unit. I was meant to be in there about 5 or 6 months. And I decided it wasn't really for me, because the rehab side of things wasn't what I thought it'd be. I only got 45 minutes physio 3 times a week, and any kind of hope was false hope and any positivity was denial. The actual care there to get better, get off the ventilator, was absolutely exceptional. You know, I'm truly grateful for that. But for me, it wasn't quite enough work to keep myself fit and healthy and try and get any improvements. So I decided to take my own kind of journey and do as much rehab as I could. And one of the things I'd be doing would be standing in a standing frame, which is pretty boring, but it's good for your bones, it's good for your muscles. But to pass the time, I'd go on my laptop. And it was only about 10 months after my accident, I'd split with my boyfriend who I was with for 4 years, because a spinal injury has a huge impact on everyone around you, not just yourself. And I knew it wasn't the same. I felt like he didn't want me like this, and it was doing my confidence a lot of harm. I don't think I could have been lowering confidence or self-esteem at the time. Anyway, I was in the standing frame, and one of my friends had accidentally clicked on a dating website link. I think it was an advert on Facebook. So it came up as one of the last pages on. So I looked at it, I thought, oh, I'll fill that out. And I did, and I put photos of me, mainly really before the accident, things that I'd done, skydives and eventing and stuff. But I said about my accident, I was in a wheelchair, but I was determined to give it my all. I'd been on it 3 days, and Dan sent me a message, and I looked at his profile, thought, well, he looks all right. And I went to read his message, and he had to pay £20. I thought, no, I'm not wasting £20. But all my friends persuaded me to, and I bought my husband off the internet for 20 quid. So that was that job done.
He was worth 20 quid, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a big turning point in my life, really. And And I really started to realise then that actually I'm sat down, but I'm still the same person and I've got to make the most of it.
I remember one story that really struck me that you told me in the many hours we've spent together over the last few years doing various things, is that in hospital, I think somebody said to you, oh, you know, don't worry, you'll be able to go skiing again with disabled friends. And you reacting that, I'll go skiing again with friends.
Yeah.
You'd never really seen yourself as disabled, have you, Claire? It's,
no.
You know, you're still an able-bodied person who needs the help of a chair.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was hard because in hospital, they said, you'll make new friends now. And I thought, well, I don't really want new friends. I like the friends that I've got. And I very much felt like they were saying, this is your new life and stuff, in which it did change a lot of things, but it hasn't changed everything. And I have had to find a lot of new sports to do because I couldn't go back to anything that I did before my accident. But I have kept a lot of the same friends and I found things that I can do with my family and people that I knew before. And my accident and my injury doesn't have to define who I am. I have got friends now that have had accidents that I've met through, you know, various things, but I've also got a lot of friends that I had before that I love to keep. Yeah, part of my life is the same.
And you love your skiing. I mean, I've seen you on the mono ski. It was quite tricky to learn though, wasn't it?
Very difficult. I'd say the skiing was the first thing that really got me away from my injury. I started to learn about 18 months after my accident. And when I got into mono ski, I didn't think about my spinal cord injury at all, partly because I was so rubbish at it. I fell and fell and fell, but I always knew that I wanted to do it. So I stuck with it. I felt like my old self because I had that focus back and that determination to get stuck into something. So yeah, I got a bit better gradually. I also got offered a job close to where I lived in a ski office. And it wasn't my ideal job. I felt a little bit angry when I was offered it in a strange kind of way because I felt that I could have done this when I was 16. I'd done 4 years at university and life hadn't gone how I thought it was going to be. And, you know, I wasn't doing what I expected I'd be doing at this stage. But then that other voice in my head said, no, take every opportunity. And it's another part of that jigsaw put in. And even on the days that I didn't feel like going in, I'd always make myself go. And again, always felt better for going.
And didn't you get to the point with the skiing, Claire, that you could have been considered for the Paralympics?
Yeah, I went on to a weekend course and I got selected onto the development squad who would then train me for the Paralympics. But when I was on the weekend course, I knew it wasn't really for me, really because I put everything into my sport of eventing. And, you know, to do a sport at a top level, you've got to be really dedicated and quite selfish at times. You have to put that first if you want to go and win medals. And life was starting to move on. And there's one main reason is that I was 12 weeks pregnant with little Maisie. And it still amazes me now that nothing really works from the chest down, yet I can grow a beautiful little girl. And, you know, I was just always grateful that Maisie came into my life and this time changed my life, but for the good.
And did you know that you'd be able to have children after the accident or was that in question?
When I was in hospital, I wasn't completely sure whether, you know, it would affect me having children. And it was one of my early questions. And I didn't lie in hospital wondering if I'd walk a London marathon. But I did think, would I ever meet anyone? Because I knew it wasn't really going to work with who I was with. And would I ever have a family? Way more important than any of the other things I've done. So, yeah, it was one of my first questions, one of my biggest worries. And I'm so lucky to have her. I also, when I was 13, I had a cyst on my ovary and I had my right ovary removed and this big cyst. So that was another reason that at the time they didn't know if I could definitely have children. So when Maisie came along, it was a great feeling.
Maisie's 9 now and you've got a second daughter, Chloe, who's 3. They've not known any different. You've always been in your wheelchair. But how do you explain what happened to them and how much help and support do they give you? I'm just wondering if sometimes they're helping you do things that you might traditionally be helping them do.
Yeah. So when Maisie was 3, I thought I'd tell her why mummy's in a wheelchair. I said, oh, Maisie, you know, I hit a tree, hurt my back so my legs don't work. And I thought I'd give her a couple of days and I'll ask her. I said, Maisie, do you remember why mummy's in a wheelchair? And she just looked at me and said, because you've got a fat bum. Oh, great. So I don't know which of my friends told her that. Maybe it was Dan. But so, yeah, exactly. They've always been used to it. I don't know what Chloe thinks. She don't think she quite realises exactly why I'm in a wheelchair yet. But obviously Maisie 9 now does. And she does. She's helped me a lot. And particularly with Chloe being, you know, 6 years younger, Maisie's been a huge help. Because when Chloe, just before she started walking, and she was really heavy for me to lift, and with being quite a high spinal cord injury, I don't have any stomach or back muscles that work. So the picking up of her was very difficult, like getting her in the car seat. But Maisie would then put Chloe in the car and then get my wheelchair in the back and then get herself in. And you know, it's normal to us, but sometimes people would see her doing it out and you could just see them stopping and looking at her, and sometimes even came up to her and said what a good girl she is. So that was really nice.
Now Maisie's a bit older, I suppose she understands a lot more now. And so presumably you've had more grown-up conversations with her.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would say, like, what does Maisie think of it and everything? But it is normal to Maisie. However, hopefully it'll make her more aware of other people, which I think is one of the big things I've got out of it, not just because of my injury, but because of the schools that I've been into, children with disabilities, just a lot of different problems. And it's very easy to be in your own bubble. And my accident certainly has taken me out of that, not just from a personal kind of perspective of my own injury, but everything I've seen going on around me. You know, when I was in hospital, there's a lot of people with neck injuries that couldn't even wipe their own tears away. Some needing a ventilator 24/7, you know, carers for the rest of their life, and a lot of young people. So I think hopefully I can make Maisie really be grateful for what a lot of us take for granted. And I think that can kind of make you a happier person anyway, because if you're grateful for what you've got, you end up being a happier person. And I honestly think that I appreciate the third of my body that works way more than I ever did the full use of my body, because I never really gave it any thought at all.
Your walking of the London Marathon in the robotic suit made headlines all over the world, Claire. What gave you the idea to do it in the first place?
I saw the ReWalk suit on the internet and I thought it'd be a brilliant bit of kit to do some rehab in, get my weight onto my feet in a good posture, but also as a fundraising tool. Because in the early days, even though I had those dark days I described and they were extremely tough, I also had moments where I felt really lucky, and I'd look around me in the spinal unit and there's a lot more people with neck injuries and back injuries who couldn't feed themselves, dress themselves. So that's when I decided to do what I could do to help cure paralysis. And that's where it all started. So I thought if I managed to get the suit, and I fundraised to get the suit with the help of the Equestrian World and the Matt Hampson Foundation, if I managed to get the suit, then I could do a big fundraising event. And that's how it all started. And I was actually the first person in the UK in the suit in January 2012. And it took a while to even get the suit because you couldn't just go and buy one. You had to be trained in it, and a rehab centre needed to get the suit. And I got the money raised, but didn't look like it was even going to make it to the UK that quickly. And so I entered the London Marathon thinking that would persuade them. So I'd got my place in the London Marathon, got the money raised for the suit, and eventually did manage to get it here just in time to do it in 2012. And I found it just like the skiing. I found it so difficult. It took a lot of perseverance and it was frustrating at times, but I did manage to get there. And I just figured that every step would get me a step closer to the finish line.
Well, we took lots of footage of you live on GMTV in those days. And I remember doing commentary over extraordinary images of you. Describe for those people who perhaps didn't see that kind of news footage what it was like and how you actually managed in your special suit. And Dan was a big support too, wasn't he?
So it doesn't just walk for me. I use the parts that aren't paralysed to make the suit work. It has a sensor just above the pelvis and it detects where my weight is. So I use my arms and shoulders and I have crutches to push my weight each side for each step. And I have to get the timing absolutely right. It waits for me to actually tell it for the next step. And if there's a slope, a bump or anything, you need a little bit more tilt so your foot picks up more. So you're constantly looking at the ground and it is absolutely exhausting. Physically, it was hard for me, even keeping myself upright and balanced, but also mentally to focus that hard for 17 days in a row. It was some very long days, but it was so worth it.
What kept you going, Claire, over those 17 days? Because, I mean, most people struggle with the run, which just takes a few hours. I mean, I know I've done lots of challenges in my life, but I would never attempt a marathon. And so what kept you going?
There were quite a few things. The fundraising, the donations I was getting really helped. People coming out and supporting me. I was raising awareness for spinal injuries as well as the money to help cure paralysis. So all of that really helped. And going back to the early days, getting out of bed when you had no reason to get up was a lot harder than actually walking the London Marathon. I had a lot of reasons I wanted to do it. I love a personal goal, a challenge as well. So yeah, it didn't seem as hard as making myself get out of bed to do a bit of rehab on my own, not raising any money with no support, really. That's where you needed just really to dig as deep as you could to find the motivation to do those boring rehab stuff. This was at least a little bit more exciting. So I did manage to keep going throughout it, and it was certainly worth it.
I remember shots of Dan by your side. I mean, he sort of had to be there in case you sort of fell or anything like that, didn't he? He was essential to the challenge too.
Yeah, I did fall in my training. I got so I was on my own, and then you realised all it would take is one of the crutches to slip, or you lose your balance and then you could have quite a nasty fall. So decided that I'd have someone behind me, and it was split between a physio and Dan on the London Marathon because I was out there so long. Dan did have to go back to work. But yeah, that was, you know, a great support, and my family being with me, and Maisie was trying to learn to walk at just the same time. So we had a competition going on of who would be the first one to walk, and she got a lot better faster than me.
Now, you did make headlines all over the world, but yet when you crossed the finishing line 17 days after you set out, you were denied a medal, weren't you?
It was the first year they decided that anyone longer than the cutoff time on the day of the actual London Marathon race couldn't have a medal. So the organisers were adamant I couldn't have one. But one of the people who did support me is Matthew Pinson. I didn't know him before I did the London Marathon, but he joined me on the first day, and he came back again, and then he came on the last day, and I didn't know, but he put on Twitter if anyone would donate their medal, if they'd run it that year, to Claire, he'd go and donate it. And he came on the last day with a box with about 18 medals in and letters from other runners, and it really was quite overwhelming. It was just people's support and generosity, all of them. They, you know, those runners had flogged their own guts out to get to the finish line, and it's not easy for anyone. So then to hand their medal to me, you can imagine how emotional it was at the finish.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But being you, Claire, you weren't content with completing that challenge and then resting, because you've carried on to do some other fantastic challenges, including cycling, haven't you?
Yeah, so the following year, I did a hand cycle challenge where I cycled 400 miles around parts of England visiting schools. It's also when my speaking started, and I was just asked on Twitter if I wanted to go into a school to speak, and I looked at it and I thought, oh, don't do that, I hate doing that. How many times I'd probably told myself I couldn't do it and didn't like it. And then I thought again, you know, sometimes we change in life, we go through different life experiences, and something we perhaps didn't like once before could be different now. And I thought, go and try it. And I did, and absolutely loved it. And the kids' response made me come up with the next challenge, where I visited two schools a day and did the hand cycling and raised money for two charities, Spinal Research and the Nichols Spinal Injury Foundation. And it's also just after that when my career changed as well, and I became a motivational speaker, which is something I certainly never thought I'd do. It's funny how life can change sometimes.
And how much do you enjoy those speeches now and those talks to both businesses and to youngsters and school children?
Oh, I love it. It's great. So I started off by doing a lot of schools, and they would then fundraise for the charity, and then going on from there with word of mouth, and got back, I was asked to go and to do some corporate ones, and now I'm with a lot of speaking agencies as well. So I'm pretty busy with it as a career, going off to different businesses and speaking about dealing with change and challenging yourself and overcoming adversity, teamwork, all that kind of thing. And yeah, just going in and hopefully making people realise that you can go through difficult times, but if you persevere and have a good attitude, then you can get through it.
And what sort of response do you get, Claire, when you go into businesses and chat to them about, you know, what you've achieved and what you've done and how you've dealt with your injury?
Yeah, it still amazes me now. And I'm always nervous just before, which is good. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, before my accident, I spent most weekends competing on the horses, and I always had that buzz of being nervous and pushing myself out of my comfort zone. So now I managed it through various challenges and even my career. So I'm always, yeah, a bit nervous before going on the stage. But after, when people come and say, you know, what it meant to them and what they got from it and how it's made them think and appreciate what they've got more and pushing themselves on and take on challenges themselves, then, you know, it's truly worth it, because everyone goes through ups and downs in life. Even if you're not paralysed or a life-changing accident, we all have moments where we don't feel as good and we need to get through it, and difficulties. And if I can help one or two people along the way get through those, you know, hard times, then it's worth it.
You came to Jack, my little boy's primary school, and it's interesting to watch you in action, how obviously you change your story in terms of what you tell them, depending on who the audience is. And I remember one of the lovely lines that you told those young children aged between 4 and 10 was that, yes, you'd really love to be able to walk again, but you felt that in many ways your life has been richer after the accident rather than before the accident. And that really is a very positive message, isn't it, Claire? And I know that is how you feel, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, if I had to name the best 5 times of my life, they'd probably all come after my accident, meeting Dan and having my little girls and some of the challenges, some of the schools I've been into and the things that I've done. I know that I've been lucky. I couldn't have done what I've done without the huge support of a lot of people. But also, I know that I've made my own luck, because if I'd carried on dwelling on all those things I'd lost, which I did in the early days, but if I'd kept doing that, then I wouldn't have gone on and had these times after my accident. Sometimes you just got to focus on what you can do and not what you can't do, because you won't move forward at all if you just keep thinking of things that aren't possible.
You've raised around £750,000 for charity, which is absolutely incredible. And tens of thousands of that for a charity I helped set up, which I know is really close to your heart, the Nichols Spinal Injury Foundation. But you've been recognised for that, which is how you come to be Claire Lomas MBE now. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I got the letter back in 2016, and I didn't realise that was going to be such a huge year, because I saw the Nichols Foundation had got one place left in the Vitality 10K in London. So it'd been 4 years since the London Marathon. I thought maybe I could really set myself a tough goal and go and walk 10K in a day. So just over 6 miles. I did about 1.5 miles a day on the London Marathon. So it's going to be tough. But anyway, Nichols Foundation were pleased for me to do it, but the organisers banned me. They said I had an unfair advantage because the suit's got a motor. I thought, well, I know where I'm going to come, last by miles. Anyway, I did end up doing it as an unofficial competitor. I started at 5 a.m. and finished at 5 p.m. and it raised around £10,000. But because of the ban, it got a lot of national media, and every race started to invite me to do theirs. And I thought, oh God, don't even like walking. But anyway, one did appeal to me. It was the Great North Run. So I ended up doing the Great North Run in 2016. I did it in 5 days. I had a 5-day head start. I did just get there in front of Mo Farah. First one to go over the finish line. So that was different for me. It was an amazing experience. But it was particularly hard because I was actually 16 weeks pregnant when I did the Great North Run. My training for it was awful and I felt horrible. My blood pressure was very challenging because it kept dropping really low, because pregnancy does that, and so does spinal cord injuries, particularly when you go to stand up when you're sat all the time. So I really, really struggled with that. And then at the end of 2016, I got a very exciting bit of post saying I've been awarded an MBE. So I sent the letter back saying I'd love to accept, but I put at the bottom, please avoid end of February baby due for the investiture. Anyway, I had complications with little Chloe and I was in hospital most of January 2017, and Dan bought me some formal looking posting. Anyway, I opened it. I thought, surely it's not. I opened it. It was the investiture, 28th of February, baby due 26th of February. So I thought, oh, I'm going to have a baby in Buckingham Palace. But Chloe decided to arrive 5 weeks early. So it was an incredible special day for us, because right near Chloe's due date, she was 5 weeks old, and I had all my family there to thank them for helping me get to where I am now and celebrating with them.
What was the day like? I know Prince William actually gave you the MBE, didn't he?
Yes, it really was such a special moment. At the time, when I was waiting to go in, I thought this is meant to be like huge honour. I just felt so nervous. I thought, this isn't fun. I feel sick. I was so nervous that I was going to do something wrong. And there wasn't that much to remember that I'd got to do, but I thought I'm bound to be the only one that does it wrong. But no, honestly, I never thought that I'd have days like that and do what I've done when I was lying in hospital, feeling like the whole world had crumbled on me and life was never going to be any good ever again. So yeah, it's quite incredible.
And I bet the other thing you never thought you would do is ride motorcycles against able-bodied riders. I follow you on Twitter, Claire, and sometimes we go a few months without hearing from each other or whatever, and it's like, oh my goodness, what on earth is Claire up to now? Tell us about your motorcycling. Yeah.
So I never thought I'd ride a motorbike. I never sat on a motorbike before my accident. It's, you know, totally new to me. And there's a charity that usually got motorbike riders back onto motorbikes. And they asked me if I'd like to have a go. And again, that voice said, oh, I'd take every opportunity. So I did. And then that's how it started. And I went on and carried on learning and eventually got my race license so that I could go on track days, mainly men, mainly able-bodied people, but I have a bit of Velcro on my knee, a toe clip in front of my feet so my feet can't slide off, and then a gear shifters on my left hand instead of using your feet to do it. And yeah, once I'm on the track, you wouldn't know I was paralysed. I have Dan or my dad usually catching and launching me from the pit lane, and then I go around the track, and it's a bit better than the suit, it's a bit quicker. I'm still usually the slowest, but I get up to about 106 miles an hour along the straights, and it's pretty exhilarating.
Does that sense of speed really give you that thrill of, I don't know, the taste of freedom, I suppose, that in your daily life you're missing?
Yeah, totally. Everything's slower in a wheelchair. I'm used to it, it's my normal now, but like getting in and out of the car, everything's just that little bit harder work, a little bit slower. I get on the motorbike or my mono ski or, you know, different things that I've found to do. I'm just learning to fly as well at the moment. So I'm hoping to get my pilot license this year, if I get enough lessons in this year, or if not next year. Those kind of things give me that freedom, that adrenaline, everything. It's not that I've changed as a person. I was like this before my accident. I was an event rider. It's a high adrenaline sport. And I thought that had all come to a stop, really. I thought being paralyzed would be boring, but I can tell you what, there's nothing boring about being Velcroed on a Ducati motorbike.
And what's next for you, Claire?
So my plans are to keep fundraising. I'd love to get to £1 million. So I have quite a few different fundraising events. I've got a team coming to the Great South Run in October, if that goes ahead and it's on. I've already got about 50 signed up, and we're going to have a pasta party and the night before, and then everyone will raise a minimal of £100 for the Nichols Spinal Injury Foundation. And I hope I can make that a yearly event. So get people from different events I'm speaking at signed up. And it's not really, I'm not really looking for just runners. Some do run events, but I'm looking for people who perhaps don't do anything like this and they want to set themselves a challenge. And even if they walk it, I'm going to push it around in my wheelchair, even if they walk it or jog alongside me, whatever, just get active, because being active and being out in the fresh air has huge benefits physically and mentally. So encouraging people to do that. I'm also meant to be doing the London Marathon, and I'm doing that, pushing the 26 miles round, wearing my motorcycling gear, so my full leathers, which I can hardly move in, my helmet, my boots. It's awful. So I'm doing that for a charity called Whiz Kids that helps children, disabled children, get mobility equipment. And then I'm also going to try and get my pilot license. So I've done 12 hours so far, and I'll be back on track days as well, with the ultimate aim would be a lap of the Isle of Man TT course in the future.
Gosh, Claire, it's been great to chat to you today. You leave me slightly exhausted. On that first challenge you just mentioned just now, how far did you say it was?
The Great South Run is a 10-mile, flat 10-mile course. It's in Portsmouth. It's such a lovely event. I did it in 2017, did it as a 24-hour challenge in my suit, and I did manage to walk it all through the night, 24 hours non-stop. And yeah, so I'm going to go back and do it in my wheelchair this time with a big team of people.
Shall I come and keep your company?
Come along,
shall
definitely.
I?
And most of all, we'll have great, great time. Like the night before, we'll get together, do a bit of speaking and getting the team together, encouraging everyone. Like I said, people don't usually do things as well as the ones which run quite often. We've got a whole mix of abilities.
Listen, that's a promise. I'll come and do that with you. You can.
Oh, that would be amazing.
We'll have great fun and laugh as we always do. Give my love to Mum and Dad and to Dan,
yeah,
and to the children.
No,
any time in your company, Claire, always leaves me feeling really positive and in awe of what you do on a daily basis. So I'm going to let you get back to the kids and Dan, and I look forward to visiting Leicestershire when life here gets back,
yeah,
to normal.
Exactly, yeah, and love to all you guys as well. Thank you.
Oh, well, that was Claire Lomas, MBE, who has raised more than £750,000 for charity. She's got the million in her sights, and I know she'll get there, challenging herself to do things many able-bodied people would find too hard. I hope you've enjoyed my Convex conversation with Claire. Thanks for listening, and do feel free to share this with your friends and family. The link is convex.podbean.com, or you'll find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I'll be back next week with a very personal chat with Convex CEO and Chairman Stephen Catlin, so do join me then.